Hey there, welcome to the Move Smart Podcast, episode 13. As always, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen today. I work really hard to bring on the best people I possibly can, and I spend a lot of time thinking about the best questions to ask, really just an attempt to distill as much wisdom and practical advice for you as possible. The movement quote for this week is a Dutch proverb, and it goes like this: "We are too soon old and too late smart." I really love that quote, and the lesson I take from it as it relates to movement is really just to not wait until you've done irreversible damage to your joints and tissue before you start learning how to properly care for your body, to properly listen to your body, how to move and train sustainably. You don't have time to make all the mistakes out there as it relates to training or life. And while I do believe that oftentimes the best learning comes from mistakes, they don't all have to be your own. You don't have time in your life. You can't afford the physical costs of making frequent or serious mistakes and causing permanent damage to your body. So learn from other people. Don't be too soon old and too late smart. All right, the next thing, as far as future guests goes, I'm going to be recording a session with Mark Sisson of the Primal Blueprint, Mark's Daily Apple, next week, which should be really great. I'm looking forward to chatting with Mark. If you have any questions you'd like me to ask him or any guest suggestions for future episodes, just let me know at justin@wellroundedathlete.net. Okay, next thing is I've got quite a few exciting things coming up. So some of you might know Ido Portal is doing like a 30-day hanging challenge. I've been doing a lot of my own study and research on hanging and brachiation, developing some good movements and tools, progressions, and I'll be releasing a big multimedia report on that here in a couple weeks. So actually, there's going to be a lot in there. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be my first one. I'm hoping to release something like that every month or two on a big topic that I spend time, you know, studying, and I'm going to be compiling all that I learn in that sort of block of time. So in that vein, in a couple of days, I'll be releasing a tutorial, which is just for my email subscribers, at least for the first couple days. I might release it to the general public in, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. But it's a do-it-yourself adjustable strap or straps for gymnastics rings, and you can make these for like 25 cents or, you know, maybe a couple bucks depending on what type of rope or webbing you use. And it basically just you've got to know 3 basic knots, and it's really cool. I was taking a nap yesterday and trying to go to sleep, and it came to me, like, I'd been sort of trying to figure out how to do it, came to me as I was there napping, and I've put the pieces together, and it's a really cool little system. You can have an adjustable strap for really anything. So anyway, if you're not on my email list, you'll get that in 2 to 3 weeks. If you are, you'll get it in 2 to 3 days. So, you know, if you sign up for my email list, you'll also get 2 really awesome ebooks I spend a lot of time on. You'll learn some great stuff. There's also 10 other reasons to join. Just go to wellroundedathlete.net/email. Last thing before we get started today is, if you haven't already, please take 30 seconds to rate and review the show. It would mean a lot to me. It's going to help build this movement community. And, you know, if you just take a screenshot, email it to me, you'll be entered to win with only 10 other people. So you've got a good chance of winning. You'll have a chance to win a 30-minute Skype session with me where you can ask me anything you want. If that sounds interesting to you, and even if not, if you could just take a second to rate and review, you can go to wellroundedathlete.net/rate, and it'll sort of walk you through that. All right, that's it. Let's get to the show. Thanks for joining us today. This is Justin Goodhart. I'm here with my co-host, Sean Maples, and a special guest today. Got professional acrobat and circus performer, Louis West. So if you're not familiar with any of his work, you need to stop this, pause it right now, go to YouTube and search for Floorgasm. That's Floorgasm. And seriously, prepare to have your mind blown. There's not a ton of information about Louis online, but here's what I've managed to piece together so far for a little introduction for you guys. He's got a background in gymnastics, in trampolining, and breakdance, and various other circus disciplines. He graduated from the National Institute of Circus Arts in 2008 with honors, and straight after that, flew to Australia, joined Circa's professional ensemble, which he still performs in. Actually, I think just got back from performance. And he's primarily an ensemble performer, but he loves group acrobatics. In 2013, he did a solo piece on the straps and won a gold medal. That was from the Festival Mondial du Cirque du Domaine in Paris. I may have just butchered all those pronunciations. Louis, welcome to the show, man. I'm super excited you're here. Like I said before, I have no idea what we'll end up talking about today, but either way, it's going to be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, hey, man, let's dive right in. When I asked you to come on the show, you told me that you didn't necessarily think about movement like maybe me or Ido or other people. Not that I compare myself to Ido. He's definitely on a completely other level than me. But, you know, you said you don't necessarily think about movement in the same way. So can we unpack that a little bit? Like, what's your big picture perspective on movement and physical culture, and what really drew you to the circus world?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I said that, I kind of just meant that I haven't really thought in depth about all these things. I love that people like you and Ido exist, and I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts and a bunch of the people who've come on the show who've dedicated years to figuring out why stretching works and how to do it better and all that kind of thing. Whereas I kind of feel like a guy who's just doing what he loves to do, and that's why I got into circus. Like, I kind of just stumbled into it, you know, grew up in quite a physical family, doing different sports and things, and just one thing led to another, and step by step I found myself becoming a circus performer and making all those things that you saw on YouTube just for fun, basically.
Yeah, so I guess if it's something you sort of fell into, but, you know, performing at that high of a level, it doesn't just happened by accident, I don't think. You know, obviously there's been a lot of dedication and stuff like that behind it. So I guess what is that taken for you, like, to develop those sort of physical abilities? Can you maybe go into your background a little bit in trampolining, gymnastics, stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I'm the youngest of four boys, and I think that is quite an important thing, especially because my brother, who's just older than me, has a profound physical and intellectual disability. And so being in an active family, you know, playing soccer, going for bushwalks, all that kind of thing, swimming in the ocean, and I had two older brothers who were always a bit, you know, better, stronger, faster, smarter than I was, and there was that gap with my just elder than me brother. And so watching them, like, I was always trying to catch up. And so there was that aspect, but then you know, my elder brother did gymnastics and I followed him into that. And then I realized that actually that was fucking hard and made me cry doing all the really hard strength work. And it wasn't a lot of fun. Like, I loved the acrobatic component, but I didn't necessarily love the hard work component. And so I left that, but I knew I still wanted to be physical. Like, I tried a bit of trampolining and found breakdancing, and breakdancing was really interesting for me because it was so much fun and the community was so supportive. And then I learned to juggle, and learning to juggle was kind of my gateway into circus. I became quite obsessed with it for a few years and did it a ridiculous amount. My dad once told me that if I did my schoolwork as much as I juggled, that would be, you know, he couldn't imagine where I'd end up. But luckily, a few years later, he came back and said, "I'm sorry I said that. I'm so glad you kept juggling, because, you know, it took me to where I am now." So, yeah, but it kind of, for me, it was just, I feel incredibly lucky to be born in a supportive family, you know, in a first world country, and to have, I've just had a lot of opportunities and made the most of opportunities, but really I've just been doing what I love, moving from thing to thing and just jumping at the opportunities to learn from everyone I meet and just do this. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty big lesson. Just, I like what you said about following the physical disciplines and things that you enjoyed. You kind of built your own set of, like, physical skills that you enjoyed. And it's kind of, you know, you couldn't necessarily, like Steve Jobs, you know, you couldn't connect the dots moving forward, you can only connect them backwards, but you built, like, this crazy, you know, wide variety of physical skills that now you're able to express in a professional sense. And I really do encourage, whether or not people are going to be performing at a professional level, I'm sure most won't, but still, I think that same principle applies, that you should be cultivating physical skills that, like, you enjoy, that interest you, that, you know, somehow speak to you or move you. And I just think that's very cool that you did that. And now you can express that at such a high level.
So, I mean, it seems like even before you got to circus school, you had a really, like, robust background of movement. You know, what was it like making the transition into, you know, the professional world of movement?
Yeah, one thing I didn't mention in that last chunk of stuff I did was that after I learned to juggle, I joined a youth circus in Canberra called Warehouse Circus. And it was there that I discovered the love of performing. And again, that was a really, really supportive culture, a lot of really great people. And so after youth circus, and then I went to we did, we did public performances, just small things around it, like festivals and that kind of stuff. And so taking that, going to the National Institute of Circus Arts and just developing the skills there more. And I had a bunch of friends from Canberra who had opened up a circus studio called Out of the Blue, and they also did circus gigs around Melbourne because that's where the school was. And so because of my contacts with them, and they knew who I was, and I'd go and do a few gigs around there. And so again, it was just like, picking things up slowly. And then when I did my first tour with Circa, it was a bit of a whirlwind experience, and it kind of hasn't stopped in the last 6 years. But I graduated from NICA. The next day I left Melbourne to fly to Brisbane, and I walked into the Circa studio and saw a whole bunch of people. I didn't really know anything about the company. I just knew I wanted to work somewhere, and I just happened to luck out and land in this amazing circus company. Mm. And there were six other people doing some pretty weird shit. And I wondered what I got myself into. But 3 weeks later, I was in Germany and Belgium touring around and performing in shows with them. And so it was definitely a wild ride, but it's very exciting. I'm not sure if that answered the question you were after, but
yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm trying to envision what going to circus school is like. You know, in my head, I guess I got this like curriculum, like, 8 a.m. front flips, 9 a.m. back flips. what is that like?
It is a part of a university. It's attached to Swinburne University in Melbourne, and so they have to fulfill certain requirements. And so there's a component that it's mainly physical, so the circus skills and the performance arts and that kind of thing. But there's also a theory component, which unfortunately when I was there, it wasn't taken so seriously. It kind of felt a bit like the theory part is there to fulfill the university requirement rather than to be useful, and some of the teachers were really good and some not so much. So yeah, in the morning it was all physical stuff. It was warm up, and then we went into basics, and basics in this school were flexibility, handstands, and tumbling. And then after you've done that for a while, you choose two specialties. So in circus, there's obviously a whole bunch of different apparatus. And so you decide what you want to do and what you want to get better at, whether that's Chinese pole, aerial straps, specializing in handstands, basically anything, because, circus is wide and varied. So if you can find someone to teach you and you're interested in learning it, then you can put the time in for the 3 years and hopefully come out with an act. And then on the theory side, there's also some group work in the physical side, but it's not pushed as much. I think it is more now, but when I was there, we did a little bit of like acrobatic, partner acrobatics, like standing on shoulders, hand to hand, that kind of thing. But then, in the afternoon, there's more theory, which is like anatomy and physiology. So learning about massage and injury prevention, maintenance, all that kind of stuff, circus history, circus culture, and small business. So that kind of stuff.
Wow, that is fascinating. Gosh, I think I need to go to circus school.
Yeah, sign me up.
Those are all the things I'm interested in. Jeez.
Yeah,
so you graduated from that in 2008, right? And so that was 3 years. How old were you when you started that then?
I just turned 20. I just turned 18. So I finished year 12 in college. I'm not sure if that's called something else over there, but yeah, finished year 12 in college and then went straight to the university and turned 18 just before school that year started.
Gotcha. So then for someone in like the circus world, like, or maybe for you, all these videos on YouTube and stuff, like, it's seriously, it looks like you're having like just a ton of fun. Like, it's fun to watch and it looks like you're having a lot of fun. So, I mean, is you say these sort of recordings that I see on YouTube and stuff, these are more just sort of like play sessions for you, improv sessions, or like what exactly are we seeing in there?
When I said before that I got obsessed with juggling, my obsession kind of switched at some point from juggling to acrobatics and floor acrobatics, and it was quite a slow process. The first, I guess, what I would call creative acrobatic sequence I made, which was, I don't know, 10 moves strung together in a way that I hadn't seen before that had a certain flow or style. That probably took about 4 years to happen because I wasn't aiming for it. It's like, oh, I was breakdancing and I found these two things that went together well. And then, you know, a month later, I added something before that and then forgot about it and then came back and added to it a bit more and a bit more. And then eventually, like I discovered that, you know, that stuff was fun and it looked good. And I was getting really good feedback from people saying, oh, I hadn't seen that before. You know, that's really cool. And so I started doing that more. And as I did it more, I enjoyed it more, got better, had more ideas. And then I started just writing down a lot of trick ideas. And, you know, you have to make up weird names for all your tricks because if you haven't seen it before, you got to try and describe it. And, you know, I'd read back through my notes and go, what the hell is a reverse bear twist flip? So I did a lot of filming as well. And I'd film and then I'd rewatch, and rewatching it, I'd see what looked good and I'd get more ideas of like, oh, this thing looks like it could lead to this thing, which I wouldn't necessarily feel when I was doing it. So there, in those videos, there's kind of a mix of improvisation and improvisation that was then developed further. So I'd go, all right, today I'm working on a sequence, among other things, working on a sequence that twists on the spot, and how many tricks can I do that turn and change and but keep that flow going. And so I'd try that 10 times or whatever, and then I'd go and watch the videos that night, and I'd see which bits looked good, and then so I'd go, oh, this works well into this one, and this one works well into this one. So then I'd write down tomorrow I want to try these things in a sequence together. And then the next day I'd go in and I'd do that and improvise a bit more, and then I'd rewatch it, and then I'd come in again until I'd made a sequence that looked good. And sometimes, you know, it's like you'd just luck out and you'd flow it the right way and the thing that you made first time would be cool. And sometimes it would be like, you know, 4 or 5 training sessions until something that had started in over here ended up with something that was cool.
Yeah, no, so these were almost like intense sessions where you're almost doing this sort of improvisation and research. You mentioned you're taking notes, you're filming yourself, you're going back and reviewing it, you're thinking about all these different ideas and combinations.
Watching a shitload of YouTube would be the other thing. I watched a lot of YouTube. And would find, you know, different videos in dance, breakdance, parkour, whatever, and I would take one thing, like I'd watch 5 parkour videos, and there might be one move in there that I'd go, fuck, that was cool, I'm gonna try and do that. But I'm gonna mix it with this thing that I saw over here in a dance video, or that kind of thing. And yeah, like trawling through all the stuff that was not so interesting to me until I found a few things that stood out, and then I'd try those.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know I came across a couple of the videos and stuff that you liked on YouTube, and it was like these crazy juggling sequences and, like, you know, all sorts of different, just like amazing stuff, literally just like the best of YouTube almost in physical culture. It was, well, that's cool, yeah, to really hear the process that produced those movements we see, because, you know, like you said, I've never seen anything like that, or those combinations and those sequences and stuff. And it's, yeah, I love to hear the process that really created
That was really what I was after. Was there was at one point I was watching a tricking video and a guy was doing a double cork, and I was like, and I realized I was kind of bored with that, and I was like, fuck, that's an insanely hard skill. You know, that takes hours of dedication and training, and it looks really good, but I've seen it before. I've seen 10 different people do it, and it always looks, you know, pretty much the same. And so why would I want to put a video out of just things that I've seen other people do? It's like, I don't need other people to see that I can do things that other people did.
Yeah.
So what can I do that I've never seen before? That was really the impetus for all those videos, and still now, actually. But what can I do that I've never seen before? And it doesn't have to be wildly different. It doesn't have to be, you know, a whole new concept, but that was kind of where it started.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like with YouTube and stuff like that today, like these amazing tricks become like almost boring. You see them all the time. Eh. You know, of course, I can't do like 99% of them, but I see them and I'm like, I've seen it. But it's cool to contribute something like that. And almost like without YouTube, without this crazy reservoir of like inspiration, you know, it maybe wouldn't have been possible for you to draw from all these different sources and create something like that.
Without a doubt. Yeah, definitely.
So YouTube aside, I mean, what are some of the places you look to for inspiration? I mean, is that, I know YouTube is a great catalog of moves, but I'm sure there's more, I guess, personal exploration, I'm guessing, that happens when you're moving.
Yeah. It's kind of just, I was lucky in that a bunch of the people at Circa when I got there were really creative in their own fields. And so being around those people and seeing that they were constantly looking for new and interesting ways to do things. And Circa, when Circa started, it didn't have a very high skill level, and that's developed over time until now it's really quite incredible. But it was all about, because the skill level wasn't so high, it was about doing the basics really well and pulling those apart and putting them together in a different way. And being around that was really influential for that style. And that encouraged me to do the weird things and the try odd concepts and that kind of stuff. So there was all that fed into it. But I take inspiration from basically whatever stands out to me, and whether that's, I mean, mostly it's performing arts like dance and circus and martial arts and parkour and tricking, but also like then from other forms of like juggling manipulation that I don't do, like Diablo, and also things that I've never done any skateboarding, but I love to watch skateboarding because it's got a lot of those same elements of flow and creativity. And so, and to watch people who are really good at what they do, even if it's not what I do, you know, once people get to a certain level and their skills are good, improving vertically and getting another twist or another flip is hard. And you see the people at the top of their game with really high skill level who start to branch out, I guess I'd think of it kind of sideways. And so they've got really high skills and then they're experimenting with those. That's kind of what I find really inspiring to watch.
Mm, yeah, and I think that's kind of what we're seeing for almost the first time, is all these, you know, athletes and performers of very, very high levels. For maybe, it seems like, yeah, they're starting to branch out more into other disciplines, drawing elements from other places that then they can bring back to the original domain and propel themselves even further in it. And
all that pollination between dance forms and circus and all that, whereas before you might have, you know, ballet is super strict and you get really fucking good at ballet, and then this thing over here you get really good at that, but now it's starting to cross over, which is having really interesting results.
Yeah, and that's what Ido is about. And I think, you know, that you've seen the following that he's built around this like idea of cross-pollination almost, but maybe more for, you know, the common person who doesn't necessarily have crazy elite skills but wants to build them up. And I think it's going to be even very cool to see in the coming years as it develops more, for sure. So it sounds like a lot of this is, your main goal is like creativity, expression, physical communication. Are those some of the main things that almost drive your motivation to move and create these things?
Yeah, and fun would be another really big one.
Yeah, okay.
But a lot of it is just like just seeing what you can do. It's like, I love being a generalist. I love having knowledge in a whole bunch of different areas. So doing straps and doing tumbling and doing a bit of juggling and doing a lot of group work. Doing that, you know, that's kind of what the focus is at Circa. Is the group work and doing all those things and just seeing and like still learning. It's been really interesting for me. Like, I've been recently just learning how to learn we had to make a Chinese pole act a couple of years ago, and I'd never done Chinese pole, and I made a video of, like, you know, each week. So week one, week two, week three, week four, and kind of looking at the learning process, and it was so much fun learning something from scratch that obviously, you know, I had a lot of the building blocks of the strength and the body awareness, but then to put them into a new medium in a short amount of time, you know, with a goal of, like, at the end of these 6 weeks, you need to be able to perform a duo pole act that goes for 11 minutes.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun. So it's kind of just that, and seeing, like, oh, I wonder if I can do that thing over there. Like, or I wonder if I can, yeah, just keeping learning.
So is that in something like that, are you developing the entire, you know, the entire 11 minute thing on your own, or do you have a coach who's sort of guiding you in some of it as well? Or
in that case, it was the act had been made before, and one of the guys had left. It was a duo act, and so one of the guys, Todd Kilby, who was he'd trained at Nika for 3 years, and one of his specialties was Chinese pole. And so we knew the music and the structure of the act vaguely, and we have a director who's a mad genius, but he comes from a theater background, and so he doesn't know. I mean, he's been doing circus directing for like 10 years now, so he's got a good idea now, but when he started, he had no idea about what tricks were called and that kind of thing. But he had a really good brain for music and like what he wanted to see, even if he didn't know exactly what that was. And so, yeah, so we knew what the act was basically, and it was kind of like fill in the dots, hit these music cues. We need to make some duo work here and some duo work here. And here you'll have a solo that goes for 20 seconds. So, you know, as part of the training, make sure you develop a solo that you really like that goes for 20 seconds. And then you just, you know, you put it together and you go, oh, we did this in the last act, but it doesn't work for us here. So we'll change it. We'll do something else. Or we found this new cool trick, so let's put that in somewhere.
Gotcha. Well, so can we talk a little bit about almost learning how to learn these new skills, right? So Chinese pole is completely new for you. Like, what frameworks do you have in your mind? Like, what almost meta learning skills? How do you learn how to learn a new movement practice? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I was talking to my elder brother about this, who's incredibly smart. He's an amazing studier. Like, me and one of my brothers went into, like, the physical world, gymnastics, acrobatics, and he went more into the mental world and into, like, he's a doctor now. And I was asking him about what his process for studying and learning was. And he said that when he learns something new, the first thing he does is tries to get a good grip on the language. Because if you don't understand the language,
that's so key.
You know, you're not going to be able to learn. You know, that's going to hamper you. And so I kind of thought about that, and I think that's true as well for physical skills. So with Chinese pole, I kind of looked and said, you know, what are the basic things that you need? So you need grip strength. You need to be able to hold on to the pole with your legs. You need a bit of awareness. There's kind of a couple of basic moves that seem to either begin or end movement patterns. And so there's a couple of different static holds, and it's like, well, there's no point trying to do a dynamic move into a static hold if I'm not comfortable in the static hold position and I don't know exactly where I need to grip with my arms or my legs. So I did a lot of kind of like learning those basics of what I thought were the basics of the language, and not getting upset when, you know, when you couldn't do it, because it's new. And I could feel that, when I know how to do this, I could almost see or almost feel how that would be and what my body would need to do. But my body hadn't adapted yet. I don't know if that makes sense, but it was like I could see what I needed to do, and my body was getting there. But it just couldn't yet because it was unfamiliar.
Yeah, no, that's just, I think, beautifully put. Learning the language of that new discipline. I love the way you approach that. You kind of deconstructed, you know, what are, like, you know, the physiological or the biological, like, adaptations I need. So the grip strength, things like that. But then, you know, you approach these skills. You learned, I'm sure, the verbal language of what these things were called. But then I think really for movement, the physical language, the grammar of movement for that discipline is also key to learn. I think that's something that people can apply to really any new skill they're gonna build.
Yeah, and I guess the other aspect was straight away I was trying to play as well. It's like, you know, because it can sound a bit clinical in that way of like, oh, learn the building blocks and then put them together. But you know, it's a creative environment. And so straight away it's like, oh, I've just learned this thing. Can I get into it a different way? Or yeah, just trying to make things up. You didn't need to have a high skill level before you could start playing around and trying things that were too hard just to see what happened and that kind of stuff.
So you are almost always like, yeah, you might take on one hand this more like, you know, rigorous approach where I need to do this, this, and this, but also you're like immediately like kind of playing around, trying to be creative and just explore it too, to kind of walk that line.
Definitely. You don't need to be good at something to be creative with it. It's like, you know, so much of the tumbling in those videos that I do is like built on the easiest tricks, the tricks you learn first when you begin to tumble, like forward rolls, backward rolls, that kind of thing. And they're so, man, I think people skip through those a lot on the way to trying to get the more impressive tricks, like, oh yeah, okay, I can do a forward roll now, I'm gonna work up to the next progression and the next progression until I can do a round off backsalt. But all those simple tricks have variations that can be really interesting and really challenging as well. You know, there's some difficult variations of a forward roll, which are really fun, but you might miss out on if you go straight to the next thing.
Let's talk about the utility of, you know, foundations, because that's something you've mentioned a couple times, whether it's, you know, working Chinese pole or, you know, doing any of the other disciplines that you're involved with. You know, how important are foundations and, you know, what do you find yourself going back to?
I think foundations are super important. Like with Circa now, with our group work, we often warm up by doing basics, which basics in Circa are standing on shoulders, standing on each other's heads, standing in each other's hands, and doing hand-to-hand, so handstands in each other's hands. That kind of group work is the basics of a lot of Circa's physical languages that then get pulled apart, broken, made better. And so I think for anything, it's really key to have a good grasp of the basics, because then you can both, as I was saying, you can play horizontally with the basics and get creative there, or, you know, it's going to be hard to do the really advanced skills if you don't have a solid foundation. And I'm not sure, you know, for me, I don't know what my personal basics are. I guess I'm sure there are things, but I just move through them. That didn't make sense.
I love that idea, though, that you're talking about this, you know, you've got the basics of the group, but, you know, from that, I've never really had this framework before, this idea of developing vertically or horizontally. You know, like, you can develop the handstand vertically, which maybe is like moving into a one-arm handstand, or you could develop it horizontally where you're, you know, I don't know, doing all different leg positions, or maybe moving in different ways or things like that. I think that's a really
finding three different ways to kick up into it.
Yeah, that's something that I haven't considered before. So yeah, for you out there listening, yeah, maybe build your skills vertically, but don't forget, I think so many of us have a tendency to neglect that horizontal development of, you know, like Louis said, these basic skills, the forward roll, backward roll, all these things can be a lot of fun and developed in very creative ways horizontally. So,
and it's just another muscle I found, is that creative thinking. Like, people go like, oh no, like they feel like they can't create something new, but you just got to start and think about, like, just spend a bit of time going, oh, what's somewhere else I can take this skill. And one of the things I did a lot that was kind of like an easy, almost a cheat code, is whenever I learned a new skill, I would then try and get into and out of that skill with every other skill I already knew. And that immediately, like, you know, your repertoire grows exponentially, because you've just learned this new trick and it's right. Okay, can I get into it from a backflip? Can I move from that into a backflip? Yes. Okay, can I do that two or three different ways? Can I do it with a twist? Can I do it and change direction? And it's just like you start to have a few different concepts that you can apply to every skill you learn, and then you get better at discovering what is possible and what is going to look good and what is available.
Yeah, man, that's beautiful. And, you know, I see that. I see how the way your mind thinks, like, resulted in the sort of movement I see in those videos. And it's very cool. You know, as we're talking about this, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, that's exactly all this stuff. That's exactly what he did in that video. And again, it's like when you go from moves you already know and then create all these new ways to get into move, you know, a new move you just learned and then linking them all, like, those transitions, I think, holds so much value that, like, you know, we don't have a name for what the transition is, but it's like some, you know, it's this almost weird in-between space, but there's a ton of value for developing those skills and those transitions, and that's, yeah, that's huge.
You know, what I heard you describing is like a lot of play is built into your movement, which I think is fantastic. But I'm also curious about, you know, your training and whether, I mean, you've acquired so many skills, you know, over the years, and I'm wondering, do you still like break down and, you know, train something with like a rigorous, you know, set of like reps and sets, or is everything for you just kind of, you know, exploration and accumulation?
I still do that kind of thing, but definitely not as much as I used to. And a big reason for that is because now I'm constantly touring and doing shows with Circa. And so that doesn't leave much extra energy and excess energy for that kind of training. So we do our show calls. So we come in 3 hours before a show and we do an hour of warm-up and rehabilitation and prehab and all that, you know, listening to your body and finding out what it needs. And then we go into the skills from the show that we need to make sure are safe for tonight's performance. And then after that kind of stuff, you kind of have to fit in your own free training and creative and new work in around that. And because you've got to make sure you're physically sound and really good for the show, it kind of limits the amount of that kind of strength training and dedicated, I'm gonna dedicate an hour to this skill set or this skill, you know, maybe just one trick. It's a lot harder to fit that in. And so, but it's a lot easier to do the horizontal stuff, because you've already got the skills and you're just pulling them apart and putting them together in a different way. And so it's less energy and muscle usage, although, you know, it still has that element, but it's very different. And so I've done a lot more of that kind of thing recently. That being said, I would love to take a couple of weeks off and go and dedicate time to Chinese pole and getting really, you know, and seeing how far I could push it in a skill range and what strength I need to develop to get these skills. I still find that aspect really, really intriguing and something I want to push, but it's a lot harder to do when I'm doing all these shows and touring to different countries and different theaters, you know, every couple of days.
Gotcha. So, well, let's say you just somehow your schedule's cleared, you have those 2 weeks off and you can go to, you know, some great like tropical retreat and just train the Chinese pole, right? You got coconut water at your beck and call, beautiful women serving you food, all these things. You know, what would your training look like then if you just had complete creative expression for those 2 weeks to develop, you know, a movement skill like the Chinese pole? And really walk us through this, like, you know, what sort of warming up and prep you might do, and then, you know, how many hours a day you might train, things like that, or a play or whatever you want to call it. I know this is sort of hypothetical, but, you know, I'm curious.
Very hypothetical, although if you can convince my director that this was necessary, I would be very happy.
Yeah, you give me his number and I'll call him up.
Well, I mean, that's a really hard question for me to answer, actually. I've kind of, the way I've trained in the past, you know, I've never had it quite like that, but when I've been closer to that kind of training, I still do a lot of like, I guess it's kind of like whatever I feel like, you know, that involves a lot of still strength work and like flexibility and body maintenance to make sure I'm still able to do the tricks. So I guess, for example, if I'm just going to make it up off the top of my head, I needed to get really good at Chinese pole. And I had whatever I needed, it would probably go something like, you know, very, very good warm up with a little bit of stretching and like getting the body ready and TheraBand exercises and making, you know, listening to my body and saying what it needs today. Do I need to go easier today or do I have a lot of energy and strength that I can afford to use and like push a bit harder and kind of just listen to my body and think about where it's at. And so where, you know, what kind of stuff I could be doing that day, because it varies day to day. And then I man, it's tricky.
Well, so would you go through almost like every joint, every muscle, warming it up? I mean, the neck, the wrist, even the fingers, or, you know, like, would you hit all that stuff or?
A little bit, yeah. It's like you just scan through your body and you go, all right, this part of my body feels good, so it doesn't need so much attention today, whereas my wrist is a bit sore, so I'm going to do my wrist rehab. Or there are some things that I do ankle proprioception every warm-up because I've had problems with rolling my ankles. And so now that's just become part of my routine, is like, even if my ankles are feeling good, I spend a little bit of time making sure they've had some love, they've had some attention, and they're switched on. And then I'd get on the pole and I'd do, I guess, what I'd think of as Chinese pole basics to see how that's happening. So I'd climb it in a few different ways. I'd try a few different static holds, that kind of thing. And then from there, it would just be a bit of like, I'd probably choose a certain kind of trick and go through that. So it might be different ways of acrobatically leaving the pole and catching it again in a baby position, which is where you're hugging around the pole. And so doing five different variations of that, and then moving on and doing a little bit of handstand creative work around the base of the pole. And then so I'd probably break it up into little sections, but I also tend to not persevere with things if I can feel that they're not being helpful. Like I'd often have a plan coming into a training session of I want to try this and I want to try this and I want to do a bit of this, but if I start doing something and it's working really well, I'll just keep doing that. You know, it's like my body and brain are really in tune with tumbling this morning, so I'll, instead of going on to handstand, which I've got written down as the next thing that I'm going to start at 12, I'll just keep tumbling. Or vice versa, I start tumbling, actually it doesn't feel good, my body doesn't seem to be responding how I'd like it to be responding, I'm going to move on to something that's different. So handstands, okay, that's static. Today maybe that feels good and I'll persevere with that. Or maybe actually that also feels a bit dodgy, I'm going to move on to juggling, and that's safe and I know I'm not going to hurt myself doing that, but it's still really creative and I can push it in a different direction. So I kind of got off track there, because I'm really not sure how I'd go about doing something if I had, you know, exactly how I wanted to. How would I go about training?
No, but that's, I think, very insightful just hearing that much. Now, you know, you've talked a little bit about, you mentioned again and again, like, you know, listening to your body. And is that something that, you know, they cultivate in, you know, in as you're going to circus school, or is this something you've developed on your own? Do like most circus performers, high level circus performers, like have this where they're cultivating like high levels of, okay, what does my body need today? What do I need to spend extra time warming up? Like, you know, this sort of thing that can seem sort of intangible and a little bit like woo woo for some people out there, but like, you know, it seems like it's something I can see how it'd be useful. So can you just, I don't know, talk a little bit about that, when you started developing it, why, and all these things?
Yeah. And I totally agree. And I struggled with that for a while. The fact that, like, when I say listening to your body, even to me, it sounds kind of like hippie, you know, esoteric kind of thing, but it's just, it isn't. Like, it doesn't have to be, and it's something that I've developed personally a little bit, but it's also something the company's been good at, you know, giving us that 1 hour to do whatever we want. And just because I've been now doing that for 6 years, I've just learned that if my body says, to put it more practically, if my elbow hurts and I ignore that, then it's going to end up in an injury eventually. So I've got to go, my elbow hurts. And that's kind of what I think of listening to your body as, is it's just scanning through it. And it does sound hippie, but just seeing what it needs, doing the rehab, going through it, just kind of, yeah. I mean, it's all of that stuff that I've said earlier. I'm not quite sure how to articulate.
It can be hard, and something, you know, it does sound like, you know, like we're talking about it. It's hard to exactly pin down. It's hard to talk about how to cultivate it necessarily. But I know the same thing is true for me. Like I've had probably 2 to 3 pretty serious injuries that like have come up or gotten worse because it was like, oh, there's like, you know, it's feeling a little weird in the shoulder today, but you know, whatever, I need to get through my workout and stuff, so I'm just going to push it. and you know, it just gets worse, or you know, this and that. And it, I've had to develop that as like a self-preservation strategy. Like, oh, like, you know, listen to your body, listen to what your shoulder's saying, like those pain signals and things like this. Like it becomes a very important self-preservation strategy if you want to have any longevity in, you know, physical performance and all these things.
That's right. Thank you. You just articulated what I was trying to say. And I think that that point you made of like, it's necessary is definitely like, you know, we have to do shows. We've got shows scheduled all year round. And if we have a little injury and it gets worse, that affects the six other acrobats, and it affects the show and that kind of thing. So you have to be one step ahead of that. You have to make sure your body's good enough to do the show and isn't going to get worse, because if it does, you know, that it's not like a sporting event where you build up, and there's this one thing and you play that game, or you have that gymnastics competition and then after that it's over. It's like, no, we have to be constantly at a high enough level of health to do everything we need to do in the shows, which are very physically demanding.
So a little bit more about longevity broadly then, like what sort of career length do you see in a lot of these circus performers?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It is completely variable depending on how well you look after your body and that kind of thing. So I've met a few circus legends. We met a woman called Miss Mara, who was a trapeze artist, an incredible trapeze artist. She did, you know, she was doing one arm chin ups.
Oh my god!
Massive. They're bigger than mine.
What's her name? I've never seen a female do one arm chin ups. Ito's probably gonna produce one here in a few.
Yeah.
But what's her name again?
Miss Mara, just Mara, and she would do a static a trapeze act with no safety line, no safety net, and like, you know, hanging by the backs of her heels, all this kind of stuff. Really good, really high level, performing that act probably 8 times a week, that kind of thing. And she had an accident. She came off her trapeze and she broke her back in several places. You know, it was horrific. But 2 years later, she was back doing the same act because she pushed herself really hard and she got back on the trapeze. And I don't know the whole story of how she did it, but when I met her, she's an old woman now, and she was broken. You know, she could barely move, and she came to see our show, and we talked to her afterwards, and I asked her that, you know, it kind of came up. She said it wasn't worth it. Like, she pushed too hard for too long. She was too proud, and she went past that point of when she should have stopped, and now she's paying the price for it. And I've seen that with a few other acrobats who have done that. They push too hard, and their bodies are broken. Whereas there's also the complete opposite side of the spectrum. I know there's a guy in the Cirque Ensemble who's 44 years old, and he is a beast. Like, he puts everyone else to shame. Like, we call his muscle old growth, because you can just see, like, it's like a tree that's got these gnarled roots, so strong, and he's just like out of control. But he's looked after his body super well.
What's his name?
Those lessons. His name is Rudy Manure. Yeah, and he's incredible.
And so, you know, is he maybe someone you look up to as far as like a role model of taking care of your body, having longevity, you know, in such a physically demanding profession?
Definitely. I look at him and go, man, if I can be as good as you are when I'm your age, I'll be very happy. And he's also an inspiration creatively, because he's the most enthusiastic, constantly thinking of new ways to do acrobatic tricks, always trying stuff. Like, he's also really good in that department, which, you know, I'm sure they're interlinked. He's kept that passion alive, and he's kept his body healthy, and those two things together are very useful.
Yeah. So let's talk about then what you do specifically, because we've just talked about, you know, and you're, I'm sure, quite aware of the price that, you know, someone like Miss Mara paid for all the years and not caring for her body and stuff. I think you're acutely aware of that. Not only is it your profession, how you earn a living, but like, we all only have one life, one body, right? So what steps are you taking on maybe a daily basis that, you know, to really foster that longevity, or maybe if you can talk about Rudy, what are some of the things, have you learned anything from him about, you know, physical maintenance and longevity, things like that?
Yeah, we're both different. So I'll talk about maybe Rudy first briefly, because again, I don't know all the details of what he does, because he's in a different ensemble to me. But I know one of his big things is is to constantly keep the body guessing and to do a whole bunch of, like, to not do a routine that's the same. He's always looking for new and different, you know, kettlebells and these big springs and like, just kind of using his body in a whole bunch of different ways, climbing up stairs on his hands, backwards, forwards, in crab position, all this kind of stuff, and just doing a lot and doing a lot of varied things. And then also seeing a variety of different masseuses, physios, chiros, all those different things. And again, it's like he said, he's discovered it doesn't matter what kind of practitioner he sees as long as he's seeing someone. You know, it's like he's putting in that time and he's in that brain space of like, this is the time when I'm caring for my body. And as long as he does that, you know, it works. And for me, it's the same. I've learned from previous injuries and previous experience what I need to do to keep my body good, which is a lot of the TheraBand to keep my shoulders healthy, a lot of proprioception with my ankles to keep my ankles and tumbling healthy, like just general keeping a little bit of each, you know, lots of flexibility, I guess, would be another thing. And I don't consider myself to be particularly flexible. I'm quite flexible, but I try and keep what I call flexible enough. Like flexible enough to do all the things I need to do, flexible enough to be healthy. Because I, you know, stretching can feel amazing, but sometimes it's incredibly painful.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's cool. That's very insightful, I think, to hear that. What about from a nutritional side? Is there, you know, is that something that you guys, that you dive into, or that, you know, some of your other coworkers, performers take very seriously, or what's the story there?
There's a variety of different health food, different food that people consume. Of course, for me, I go, I love food. I love eating. It's one of the great pleasures in life. But I also like really good food. So I avoid all fast food and stuff. And it's not that I say I can't eat it. I just don't want to. I basically eat whatever I want. But what I want to eat is good meat, good vegetables, like good bread. I don't have a sweet tooth really, but I do have a bit of a fat tooth. So I like a lot of animal fats and avocados and, you know, good olive oil and that kind of stuff. And I quite enjoy cooking. So for me, like, one of the perks of the job of being an acrobat is that I get to eat a lot of food around the world and trying to, you know, trying to source good food all the time is one of the challenges.
Cool. Good to know. Yeah, that's I like that. I think that's a smart perspective. That's funny. Have a fat tooth. Sean, do you have any other questions for Louis?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, we talked before we actually started recording about, you know, your latest project in New York. What do you have going on right now? I mean, where can people, you know, find you, and, you know, what's the future for you and in your shows?
Well, that's a very big question. We are very busy. The company is very busy, and so I am also very busy. And the group, I work with six other acrobats, and this group of seven acrobats, so myself included, we do seven different shows at the moment that we are constantly switching between. In the first 7 months of the year, I've had seven long haul flights either to or from Australia. So we're super busy. We've got shows coming up. I'm just about to go to Darwin and do 2 weeks of a show called Wunderkarma, and then I come back and have a bit of rehearsal training, and we're rehashing a show called Circa, and we're improving a show called Opus, which has got 14 acrobats and a string quartet live on stage. We're still working on a couple of our family shows, 46 Circus Acts in 45 Minutes and Carnival of the Animals. We're just super busy, you know, jumping between Europe and North America and Australia. We're just doing a lot of shows. And so that's kind of what I'm focused on now is getting each of those shows up to the best possible level and performing them around the world.
Man, well, if Rudy's advice was to incorporate as much different movement as possible, I would say it's, you know, seven shows is probably hitting that mark, man.
It's definitely a struggle, but it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Good stuff. So any plans to ever do any teaching, you think? I mean, it may be a while off, but, you know, if you were to maybe do some teaching on the side, or when you're done with this performing such a demanding schedule?
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I have not done much teaching yet. Sometimes through Circa we do workshops, but they're usually only an hour. So I've done a little bit of teaching straps, and recently a little bit of teaching tumbling. And it's something I'm interested in, but it's something that I don't want to do. Like, I want to do it well. If I teach, I want to do it well, because I've seen the difference between good teachers and bad teachers.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's massive. So yes, I think at some point I would love to teach. I'd love to give back, because I've had so many people who have taught me over the years and given me really great advice and good ways of thinking about things. And I'd love to give that back. Whether I do that, you know, in parts while I keep performing, or whether I do that a bit later as a chunk and do a bit of like learning how to teach and that kind of thing, I'm not sure. But yes, I'm interested in teaching. I'm just not quite sure how to go about it yet.
Gotcha. Well, when that day comes, man, let me know. I'll be there.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is I'm always for a jam.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, if I'd have been in New York, yeah, I'd have to meet up and do some, you know, rolling or something.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So I guess, I want to be respectful of your time. We'll start wrapping it up here. But I like to ask all the guests that come on the show one practical piece of advice. Can have to do with anything, whether it's, you know, just life philosophy or approach to training, anything you want. Just one practical piece of advice, and then one book or, you know, video clip or whatever that has really been influential for you in your life.
My one practical piece of advice is a bit of a tricky one, but it's one that's held me in really good stead, which is every injury is an opportunity. You know, a lot of times when you get injured, there's nothing worse than being injured. It's incredibly frustrating. But if you don't learn something from that, then it's wasted.
Mm.
You know, it's twice as bad, because you've hurt yourself and you're not getting as much as you can out of it. So, and that can mean a lot of different ways. You know, when I have injured my ankle, I've used that as an opportunity to train more juggling and straps and handstands. And if you've injured something like your back, or you've had a surgery and you have to be less mobile, I really like the idea that I've heard a bunch of people talk about of trying to recover from injury by being active. But you can also use that injury as an opportunity to find out what else there is, what else holds your attention. You know, I've had some really good friends in the circus who've had operations and been out of action for a while, then they've discovered their passion in photography, or they've discovered who they are without circus just for a little bit. And that it really isn't, it gives them the chance to ask the question, do I really want to do this? What else is there? So I think that's a really important thing to take into account. Like, if you get injured, make sure you don't waste it.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that is brilliant advice. That can be very almost philosophical, like, right, the old philosophers, the Stoics and stuff. That's almost that sort of perspective. But 100% agree with you that, like, you know, injuring yourself and then not using that opportunity is basically doing yourself another injury. You know, it's like that saying, never waste a good crisis, because you can learn so much and take so much from those if you have, you know, the mind for it. I think that's brilliant. And then what about like a book or a clip or something like that?
Man, it's really hard to pinpoint down anything. Yeah, because I've always, my kind of thing has always been take a little bit from everywhere. Mm. So I don't think there's ever been one clip or one book. You know, a lot of books and a lot of clips have influenced me a bit, but what I really like taking a little bit from everywhere. But to give you actually something, one of my favorite quotes that I heard ages ago and that I really like is the Bruce Lee quote about being water. Have you heard that one?
I think so.
Yeah. If you put water in a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. You know, it's all about the water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend. It's all about being adaptable. And I think that's kind of what I really like. You know, be adaptable, be a generalist. If you get an injury or something, use it. There's a lot of different ways out there to improve. So find one or find several.
Brilliant, man. Great stuff. I've terrifically just love this interview. Really enjoyed it. It's been great chatting with you. I really appreciate you taking the time. I've learned a lot.
Good. I'm glad. I wasn't sure if this interview was going to be like 15 minutes of me going, duh. I'm an acrobat. I do flip. Thank you for bearing with me while my jet lagged brain.
Say hello.
My mum would like to say hello.
Oh yeah. Hey, you're the woman who brought this great acrobat into the world, huh?
I am indeed.
She's good. She is definitely has a lot of the credit for where I am. She has encouraged me every step of the way.
Oh, thank you.
No worries.
I just wanted to say hello. Goodbye.
Well, hello and goodbye. You've done good work. You raised a good son.
You raised four good sons.
Four good sons. That's right.
But, cool, man. But, yeah, thank you for bearing with my jet lagged brain in those few times where I went off on tangents.
No, man, it was great. I enjoyed every second of it. Appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope I can see one of your performances, you know, at some point in the future.
Yeah. Let's have a tumble jam sometime or something. I'm sure you've got a shitload to teach me as well.
I don't know about that, but but I'll, you know, we'll see. Yeah, I'd love to have a tumble jam or something. Cool, man. Well, good stuff. Have a good rest of your day, and yeah, I look forward to hopefully meeting you at some point in the future in real life. So,
yeah, thank you.
All right, folks, that's it for today's show. Again, please take a second to rate and review it in iTunes. Yeah, and leave a comment on whatever platform you're on about just one injury you've had in your movement career and how you dealt with it. Did you waste the injury, or did you direct it into some other pursuit? I'd really love to hear your responses to that. Also, if you found this podcast episode useful, please share it on your Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, whatever. Just, you know, it means a lot to me, helps build a community. I really appreciate it. That's everything for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next week.